This is Chris Slade, former University of Virginia defensive end, graduate of 1993, back on the staff at UVA. Excited to be back coaching my old stomping grounds. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Chris Graham. This is the Jerry Ratcliffe Show with Jerry Ratcliffe. And so much is going on this Thursday. And of course, we're going to be talking about Virginia, North Carolina, late night basketball again in Brooklyn. Tonight, a 9:30-ish tip for Virginia versus North Carolina. And we were both up late last night. A lot of you folks listening were up late last night, too. And Jerry, a big one-point win for Virginia to keep their NCAA tournament hopes alive last night in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I'm still yawning after that after that late night and the lack of offense by both teams, really. But, yeah, it was a good win. Any win's a good win at this time of the year. You just survive in advance, and as we all have become accustomed to, and it doesn't matter how ugly it is, as long as you win and stay alive to fight again, right? And that's exactly what Virginia did. Their offense was left a lot to be desired, but their defense was spot on, and that's what carried them through the game.
Well, you know, when you say that, the numbers actually ended up not being as bad as they could have been. Virginia started 2 of 18 from the floor.
True.
Finished 21 of 50, which means they were 19 of their last 32, and that was roughly in the last 30 minutes. I think Virginia still had 4 points with under 9 minutes to go in the first half. It was 13-4. Virginia was down to Louisville. I'll give them credit, man. You know, Jerry, we watched the game on Saturday, the game at the Yum Center in Louisville. Virginia won that one 71-61. Virginia led by 19. Louisville made a couple of runs, got it down as close to 7 a couple times. But it looked like on the defensive end, Louisville wasn't playing at all, really, on that end. And that was their senior day on Saturday. They played defense last night. I don't know what the difference was. Mike Peguis, maybe I'm still not good on that last name pronunciation, but whatever he did between Saturday and then Tuesday when they beat Georgia Tech, they played pretty good defense in that game for the most part and played last night against Virginia. He got his guys playing, and they made it tough for Virginia, and that was a gritty win for Virginia to have to overcome a Louisville squad that looked like they were primed for an upset.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that with Virginia going into Louisville last Saturday that their coach, Peguis, I'm not sure either, he had talked about how their team spirit had been broken and that they were just really down. And I think Virginia took advantage of that at the Yum Center, where they seemed to never lose. But, yeah, you got to give those guys credit. They came back with a fury last night, and that game could have ended up going either way. Had it not been for a couple of big defensive stops, I think, by Kihei Clark and Reese Beekman down the home stretch. But, yeah, and their coach even mentioned that if anybody wanted to see how you defend Virginia to a T, that they should watch the game film of Louisville last night. I'll give them credit. They did play really good defense. I don't know if it was to the degree that their coach thought it was, but Louisville made it tough and made it interesting, and they pushed Virginia to the limit, no question about it.
Jaden Gardner, 17 points for Virginia. Kia Clark, 15 points. Reese Beekman, 8 points, 9 assists. And I thought it was interesting, Jerry. Virginia up 47-45 right about a minute ago. Tony Bennett calls timeout, draws up a play. And as the play was developing, I'm thinking, this isn't a set I see Virginia run very much. They basically put everybody on one side of the floor, gave the ball to Reese Beekman, and let Beekman work one-on-one with Noah Locke. And Beekman just got to the basket 40 feet away, just broke his man down, got to the basket, got a layup. And it's one of those things. I say this a lot, Jerry, about Reese Beekman. There are two or three plays a game where he does something. He'll throw down a dunk in the lane over two guys, or he'll, you know, just run his way through and flip up a little finger roll or something. And you say, why don't we see more of that? This is what we want to see more from this kid. Tony took advantage of that athleticism last night in that key play. And, you know, maybe run some more ISOs for Reese Beekman. I don't know.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that, I don't think. And you're right. We see so many different facets of his game from time to time, including that three-pointer down at Duke. But that was a brilliant play he drew up during that timeout. The the ISO play that you just mentioned, and Beekman carried it out to perfection. And, you know, Tony has said time and again that Beekman is probably the most explosive player he's ever coached. He showed it on that drive last night because there was no question he was going to take it to the rack and had no trouble doing so. I still think Justin Anderson might be the most explosive, but it's a debatable point. We still haven't seen Beekman's best yet. And if he could start doing some of these things on a more consistent basis, that kind of offense to go with his defense, wow. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a big-time player if he can get it together on both ends of the court, which he seems to be coming into that phase of his career. But, yeah, that was a brilliant play drawn up by Tony and brilliant execution by Beekman. And then on the very next play, after a Louisville timeout, Beekman was in the grill of Noah Locke and forced a up and down travel after he had given Virginia a 2-possession lead. And that was with only 28 seconds left. So that was huge. Because at that point, the game was still in doubt without question. And that gave Virginia a chance to not Louisville didn't score again until 4.7 seconds to play and made it a 1-possession game. And, of course, Gardner made the 2 free throws half a second later to give Virginia the winning margin, even though Louisville hit that 3-pointer at the buzzer, which didn't really matter. But 2 huge back-to-back plays by Beekman in the last 28 seconds of the game.
Virginia was first to 50 last night. That's what was the key last night.
Exactly.
That was what turned the game around. Hey, you know, one thing that was key to the win last night, Sidney Curry had such a big game at the game at the Yum Center on the weekend. 24 points, 9 of 13 shooting, 14 rebounds, 6 of 6 to foul line. Just 6 points last night, 3 of 7 shooting, 18 minutes, foul-plagued minutes, and then he was just ineffective. So that's why he got just the 18 minutes last night. I think that there can be some lessons there because there's a guy for Carolina that Virginia will play tonight, Armando Bacot, who had 29 points, 22 rebounds. He was 12 of 18 from the floor in that 74-58 win in Chapel Hill on January 8th. And, you know, if you're a Virginia fan, you're certainly hoping to see that what worked against Sidney Curry last night can be implemented and maybe can work a little bit, at least tonight, against Armando Bacot.
I'm sure that Tony and his coaches have been dissecting the heck out of that game film and recent Carolina game film to make sure that doesn't happen again. Last time they didn't have any answer but for Bacot. And this time I'm almost certain he won't have another game like he did in Chapel Hill. I mean, nobody has had a game like that against Virginia since 1997 when Tim Duncan had 21 points, 23 rebounds. I would bet a dollar to a donut hole that there's no way that he's going to have another repeat performance like that against Virginia. Although Seth Greenberg just disagrees with me. He thinks Virginia is a good matchup with Carolina. I tend to not agree with that because Carolina has some big bodies that Virginia has to pay attention to. Virginia simply wasn't ready for that last time. I think they will be this time. But the fact that you got the big bodies coupled with Brady Manick and Caleb Love out there drilling threes, that's the kind of team that usually gives Virginia fits, the ones that can spread the floor, are a threat inside and a threat from the three-point line. And it's going to be a heck of a challenge to beat Carolina tonight and move on into the semifinals. But it's tournament time, so anything's possible.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
You know, I went back to my game coverage of that January 8th debacle. It felt like because Carolina, they won by 16, but it felt like a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And I reminded myself reading my coverage that, you know, Manek hit 5 threes, Love hit 4 threes. And really, you know, sometimes when you see teams hitting threes, it's because of great ball movement and they're hitting wide open shots. As I wrote in my game's coverage, really only one of those shots was an open shot. They were hitting tough shots. 9 threes between those two guys, hit 11 on the game. And, you know, Virginia was rotating well in that game. That was the frustrating thing for Virginia. It just seemed like everything Carolina threw at the rim from three-point range was going in, you know, relatively speaking. And then Baycott, you know, he it's not like they were, you know, force-feeding him the ball in the paint. He got a lot of his baskets off offensive rebounds. He had 9 offensive rebounds in that game. His 12 makes from the field were all layups or dunks. And then on the other side, Francisco Cuffaro, Caden Shedrick combined for 2 points and 2 rebounds. You could look at that if you're, you know, analyzing it's a one game situation there and say, okay, they made a bunch of threes with hands in their faces. They had advantage at the 5 spot, a 29-2 advantage. That's not going to happen again. And so as a result, maybe this one can be something that Virginia can pull off tonight, can pull off a big upset tonight.
I would think Virginia would make it a much tighter game simply because of that. I don't think Baycott's going to be able to roam free like that and get all those offensive rebounds and putbacks and dunks like he did the last time. I think over the last 2 months – I think Shedrick has greatly improved. If he can stay out of foul trouble in tonight's game, I think it'll be huge because he may swat a couple of Baycott shots away and he may get a couple of rebounds. And Cuffaro, I don't know if he'll add much on the offensive end, but he needs to get in there and provide some muscle on the boards and try to keep Baycott under control. And then Gardner is, you know, when they double the post, he's got to be able to – he's improved on his slides. I think he can get down in there and make life a little bit more miserable for Baycott or any of the other Carolina bigs. I think it's going to be – it's hard to imagine that Carolina will be quite as hot as they were from the three-point line. As you said, they weren't exactly wide-open shots. So – I think Virginia will turn up the defense a notch in this game, and a lot of it's going to depend on if the Cavaliers can score. And certainly the first half of that last night was something you don't want to look back on. They can't afford to get off to a terrible start like that again. But they did, like you said, they did improve in the second half.
To get back to your point about what the Louisville coach had to say about the game plan defensively for teams who play Virginia. I always wonder why more teams don't play the way Louisville did last night. What they did so effectively last night, which they didn't do in either the first two losses to Virginia this year in the regular season. They basically just said, let's just take away the lane. They almost played. I mean, it was almost like their version of a pack line defense. They, you know, Virginia didn't make a three, first team in the 3-point era in ACC tournament history to win a game in the ACC tournament without making a three, 0 for 6 from the 3-point range last night. So let's take away passing lanes, dribble drive lanes. Let's make, you know, basically what Virginia does so well is, you know, exploit the interior a bit. You know, Jaden Gardner, his sweet spot is that 8 to 12 foot jumper that he finds the seams inside and, you know, the dribble drives with Kihei Clark and Reese Beekman. And Armon Franklin, you know, kind of pulling up from 12 to 15 to 17 feet. They took all that away. And, you know, we've seen some other teams do that from time to time this year. And you say, why don't more teams do that? They just kind of, you know, play their own way. You know, one advantage Carolina has is that, you know, they've had a chance to think about this didn't have to play last night, and they have a chance to think about this. But you know, in a one game scenario, it can be tough. You're out there game planning. You know, they didn't get to game plan until about 12 o'clock last night, just like we were starting to write our stories at 12 o'clock last night. So, but yeah, I Louisville played the perfect game plan. It's just that everybody doesn't do that, and Virginia has been really good at figuring out ways to get enough points to win games.
Yeah, no question. And yeah, it's a mystery to me too. I know some coaches are stubborn and they just feel like that they're going to play their style no matter what and believe that it will work. But that's one of the beauties of Tony Bennett, is that you'll make adjustments. You'll find ways to combat the other team's strength, try to take that away. Some coaches don't do that. And I don't understand that, but on the other end, Virginia's improved so much since that January 8th meeting. I mean, it's 2 months ago. And Tony talked about that last night after the game, and what's changed between January 8th and now for his team. And he said, well, from a defensive standpoint and overall, the team has improved. Individuals have improved. The team has improved. And that means a lot to him, because you're supposed to be playing your best basketball at this time of year, and that's certainly what Virginia is doing for the most part. You know, we've talked about that before, and you know, some of the younger players have developed in their roles, like Shedrick and Cafaro, and Beekman has become much more aggressive and assertive. Jaden Gardner has got his defensive slides down. He's got that mid-range jumper honed to almost perfection. Kihei played a great game on both ends of the floor last night. And then the mystery right now is Franklin. His offense is just gone off the deep end. I don't know what the answer. I don't know if he's lost confidence. He claims he never loses confidence, but you know, he's got a nice mid-range jump shot too. And I don't think he takes advantage of it enough. He seems to linger out at the three-point line, and you know, I wouldn't mind seeing him taking a few more mid-rangers. I'll tell you, Bigman's got a nice mid-range shot that I don't know if he takes full advantage of it or not. So they may have to do that to find some holes against Carolina and try to stay with them offensively, at least through the first half, so they don't have to fight out of a hole like they did last
UVA time. Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boast one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
Yeah, exactly. Franklin, first possession of the game last night, pulled up from 15 and was shortened off to the left from the right baseline. And from there on, it just seemed like he was so hesitant to shoot the ball after that. That's, you know, for a guy whose game relies on confidence, and he's just not had confidence from three all year long. He was 42.4% at Indiana last year, and he's in the low 20s this year. One thing Tony said after the game last night I thought was great. I picked up on it and led one of my post-game stories with a couple different reporters tried to ask Tony to comment on the ugly win. One of his comments was, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, right? Exactly. He'd rather win a game that way than lose 85-82. I mean, and I guess the point being, you know, not just, you know, to quibble with the reporters, but, you know, so they weren't making shots. They found a way to win. And as he pointed out, it's interesting to see these guys. I mean, they, you know, games earlier this season that they couldn't figure out how to win, the Navy game in the opener, the JMU game up in Harrisonburg. If they could have figured those out early, we wouldn't be on the bubble right now. Most likely we'd be talking about, you know, what seed they might be getting. But last night shots weren't falling and they figured it out. And so, but yeah, it was ugly. But, you know, Tony's probably not the only one who saw that, you know, he saw his team grow a little bit more last night.
Well, those guys must have forgot what it was like before Virginia brought in all those pro players. And this was the way they had to win. And Tony hasn't forgotten that. And that's what he's all about. I mean, that's last night's game was right in his wheelhouse. They want to play great defense, give up tough shots. And, you know, if you make a tough shot, he can live with that. But you got to earn it. He wants to make people earn their shots. And if he can play good enough defense to keep a game tight, and like you said, he'll figure out a way to give themselves a chance to win in the end. And a couple of times it's backfired on him, but for the most part, he's made a career out of that. And so you're not always going to have great offense. And certainly this year has been an example of that. And last night was maybe the best example of that. You know, Gardner got hot at the right time. And he got some contributions from some other guys, but generally wasn't a lot of scoring going on. So, yeah, I think that's Tony Bennett basketball, and that's where all these slogans like embrace the pace and all that stuff came from was earlier on when that's the only way Virginia could win a basketball game. They had to play suffocating defense and make just enough of plays on offense to stay in it and find a way to win. And that may be the mantra from here until the end of this season, whenever that may come. But again, that's classic Tony Bennett.
You know, I remember when we had Jason Williford on like a day or two before the regular season started on the podcast. And you know, Virginia was picked fourth by the writers in the ACC and preseason top 25. And, you know, and I'm looking at that and saying, oh, you look at these guys that got in, Franklin and Gardner, they're going to score a lot of points. And these freshmen coming in, Murray and Milicic are going to really contribute. And, you know, maybe fourth in the ACC and 25th in the nation is probably disrespecting Virginia. And then Jason told us this team will be a work in progress. And I remember thinking when we got off, before we even posted that podcast, thinking, this is a guy who watched this team practice for a month. And he said, this is going to be a work in progress. They lose the Navy game a couple of days later, and we realized just how you know much progress would need to be made. Jerry, I don't know that I could have thought after that Navy game when Virginia went 8 minutes without a point down the stretch in that one and could not beat a Navy team that obviously then a couple of days later went out to Louisville and lost by 20 points. There's just no way I would have thought that. That this team would be playing a game tonight in the ACC tournament. They win this game tonight, they may get close to punching a ticket as an at-large team. I mean, you know, Joe Lunardi has them as a next four out team. He had them fifth on his list of the you know teams that were just on the outside of the bubble. You beat Carolina tonight, you may edge your way up there enough to sneak in the tournament. I just wouldn't have thought it, Jerry. How many 5 months ago? That team that lost to Navy could actually be maybe playing their way into the tournament. That's just, it's amazing the progress this team has made over the season.
Yeah. How many times did Jason use that phrase, work in progress, during the podcast? He kept reminding us.
He emphasized that. Yeah.
He kept reminding us of things that he saw that we weren't privy to. So he knew that what a struggle it was going to be, I believe. And yeah, after that loss to Navy, Chris, and then. I had the same thoughts after that loss at JMU and even that loss at Carolina when they were down by more than 20 points. And at that point, after that game, Virginia was only 9-6 overall and 3-2 in the ACC. Who would have thought that those guys would have been able to fight their way onto the bubble, let alone have a chance to maybe make it into the field come this weekend. Heck of a coaching job. And you know, that's, you have to admire Tony and his staff. I mean, that's what they are advertised as, program builders and developing player development. And that's what they do. And we tend to forget just how good that those coaches can make players over the length of an entire season. And sometimes it takes to the last month, like this year. It's been a couple of times when that's happened over the years. And even the good teams have gotten better for the most part in the month of February. So a heck of a coaching job by Tony Bennett. This could be his best coaching job. I mean, I think we all were in agreement back during those losses that I just mentioned, that if this team makes the NCAA, this might be the coaching job of the year, because they sure didn't look like an NCAA team after any of those losses at all.
You know, and when you for the fans listening in who might be frustrated and say, yeah, but we were always number one seeds and winning championships and everything else, everybody has a down year. Duke had a down year last year. Finished 12-11. They weren't close to NCAA tournament consideration with a group of one and dones. Carolina, in one of Roy's last couple of years, had a NIT year. His down year, they weren't close to the NCAA tournament. John Calipari, back, it was either 16 or 17, not sure which year it was, he had a team that flamed out, went to the NIT, and got blown out at Robert Morris. I mean, when those programs have down years, they don't even come close. I mean, if this is a down year for Virginia, obviously it is. To get to the stage where you're at least flirting with it. There's a talent infusion coming in next year. The guys coming back from this year's team will be a year older, a year better. So next year looks like, potentially Shangri-La once again, and, back to the, back towards the throne, if not to the throne for Virginia basketball. But, I guess there's a saying about people in general, you find the measure of a person, not when they're at the top, but when they're going through tough times. And not just Tony and the staff, but the kids too. I mean, they've had to endure a lot in the social media era. You hear it from the fans. Kihei Clark, poor kid. I mean, it's everything he's done for this program, is still half the fan base thinks he shouldn't even be on the floor. And yet these kids persist and they've gotten better. And, we'll see what happens tonight. But whatever happens tonight, I'm applauding at the end of it, because I've seen so much from this group in the last 5 months.
Yeah, Virginia fans shouldn't lose sight of that. And I agree with you about Kiyak. I mean, I don't know how many times we've heard opposing coaches this year talk about what a warrior he is and how much they hope he'll be gone after this year, because they're tired of having to game plan around him. And I think Larry Nega even said, for those morons that don't appreciate T.A. Clark, he said, I feel sorry for them because they don't know what they're missing. But even Corey Alexander mentioned that Ralph Sampson is his number one player of all time. He's that Kihei would be number two. That's quite a compliment coming from a guy who played like a dozen years in the NBA at a point guard position too. So, I like Kihei. I like what he's made of, and I don't judge him just by how many points he scores, or sometimes he might make a bad decision and drive down the lane and get stuck and have a turnover or something. But you look at all the good things he does. I mean, he gets Virginia into their offense. He gets the ball in the right place, usually in a place where his teammates can score from, even Beekman. And, sometimes he's lacking offensively, but for the most part, he's had a pretty good assist to turnover ratio throughout his career. He will forever be a hero, I think, in most hearts of Virginia fans for that pass out in Louisville to Momedy and the Great Eight, the Elite Eight in 2019 to send the Purdue game into overtime. Without that, there's no shot at a national championship at all, or a Final Four. And he's just an annoyance as a defensive player that people don't want to put up with. We've all heard all those stories. Last night he was in that guy's grill and drew the charge, and that was at a key moment as well.
Yeah.
So, but I agree. I think for this to be a down year and have 19 wins and 12 ACC wins right at this moment, most people considered that a pretty good season, not a down year, but it's a down year in Virginia's program.
It would have been a great year in the long stretch of time in the Pete Gillen and Dave Lato era, right? It would have been one of the better years.
Especially the Dave Lato era.
Yeah. We had two NCAA tournament appearances in about a 12 or 13 or 14 year period. And so we were hopeful to be on the bubble back in those days. Not looking down on that. No, Kihei Clark's got more want to and the pinky, the fingernail on his pinky than most of his critics do in their whole body. So love Kihei. And tonight the game's at 9:30-ish. We'll see. Virginia Tech went to overtime last night, pushes back a little bit. It'd be interesting. Boy, Scott German's head would explode if Virginia and Virginia Tech both won tonight and they'd play tomorrow night in Brooklyn. I'm not sure that Scott would make it to game time tomorrow night if that game would be in the semifinals for a shot at likely Duke. Duke an 88-79 winner, by the way. I'm saying likely Duke. Who knows? Duke an 88-79 winner over Syracuse today. A 10-0 run in the last 3 minutes. A Syracuse team without Buddy Boeheim gave Duke fits, to say the least. Led at halftime. Led for a good part of the second half. Jimmy Boeheim, 28 points in that game for Syracuse. Coach K saying after the game that the Duke program had some issues with food poisoning. I think I was telling you, Jerry, before we started hitting record. They had enough. They didn't have food poisoning when they were scoring the 88 on the offensive side. The food poisoning showed up when they couldn't stop Syracuse on the defensive end. But as we're talking right now, Miami and Boston College, upsetting the apple cart with the overtime win over Wake Forest yesterday. And well, now we have to wonder about Wake Forest status, right? As far as NCAA tournament's concerned.
Yeah, I would imagine they're fell onto the bubble. Big time after that loss. That was a bit of a shocker to me. I'm shocked that Syracuse played Duke so closely without Buddy Boeheim, one of the premier scorers in the league and the heart and soul of their offense. But it sounds like his brother Jimmy took it upon himself to try to make up for Buddy's absence. And, Buddy was suspended for one game for slugging Florida State player in the stomach yesterday. Refs didn't catch it, but the cameras did, and the ACC suspended him, and rightfully so. I don't see how you can defend that. And he knew it was wrong. He apologized, had a classy apology for that. For Syracuse to push Duke to the wire like that without him, even with food poisoning, you have to applaud Syracuse's effort. But it doesn't matter where the tournament seems to be. Syracuse bails out early, so maybe the Brooklyn experiment should go away. I don't know a whole lot of people that's in favor of having the ACC tournament up there where nobody seems to give a damn, and I just wish they'd put it back in Greensboro and leave it there.
Leaving Greensboro, yeah. Greensboro's a perfect place. It's the home of the ACC. I know our new commissioner also wants to move the home office away too, it seems like. But, the reason to move it up there, we were told years ago, was we want to have some visibility. So we couldn't get Madison Square Garden, so we go to Brooklyn. And New York doesn't care. New York doesn't care that we're there. Really, they care about the Big East being there. Syracuse is supposedly New York City's team, and they're not. But and then they, like you said, Jerry, they always are out early. They're not playing on Thursday or Friday or Saturday. Whereas in Greensboro, it's the game, and so they'll come to their senses eventually. Next year, they're in D.C., but it just makes it hard. You got to pay New York prices to watch all that basketball. It makes it hard to fans can't go up there. It's hard for the writers to get there up there and get around, and we know our way around Greensboro, to say the least.
Greensboro is just so easy and convenient. And I know that it's probably some of the high rollers that like to go and entertain and all that. Maybe Greensboro is not the can't match up DC and Atlanta and Brooklyn in terms of entertaining guests or going out shopping and all the other stuff. But for the pure basketball fan, it just doesn't get any better than Greensboro. I don't care if it's half full of Carolina fans or Duke fans or whatever. It's still a great atmosphere, and it means something to the people in that city and that region. And it's not like that anywhere else. Maybe Charlotte, but Charlotte's arena is smaller than Greensboro. So that's something you have to take into consideration too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The and the arena is half empty in Brooklyn. So,
and yeah, they got black tape all over the top deck.
they're not wanting us to see that there's nobody there. So yeah, we'll have. And I'm sure Jerry's got. I've got a couple pregame stories. Jerry will have a pregame story. Of course, this podcast tonight, getting you ready for the game. It's not until 9:30. We've got plenty of time. And then when you wake up tomorrow morning, you'll have all of our post game because we'll be working into the wee hours, not even the wee hours. We'll be working long into the night to recap this one. Hey, let's talk about real quick some football news. Let's just work this into the end of the podcast. News today, Virginia and JMU on the football schedule, a one-off next year in Charlottesville 2023. But interesting matchup as JMU moves to 1A to the FBS level. They'll be coming to Charlottesville next September.
Yeah, before we go into that, I just want to salute our podcast sponsors, Aberdeen Barn. You just got to go by there and get a steak, man. It's not a better place in Charlottesville to get a steak. Just go by and say hi to those great folks and get a good meal, a great meal. Also, UVA Ortho and our newest sponsor, Greenberry's Coffee, the official coffee of JerryRackliff.com. Great sponsor. And we've got some exciting news coming up with Greenberry's that we'll announce sometime next week. Stay tuned for that. I think all you coffee lovers out there will be thrilled to learn about this new promotion that we're going to be pushing starting in the next few days. So stay tuned for that. Getting back to the game, the JMU game, it's interesting. They haven't played since 1983. It was one of the first games that I covered when Virginia came here, when I came to Virginia in 82. I think they played in 81. Did they play in 81 and 82 or 81 and 83? I can't recall.
I'll look it up while you're talking because it was in the stories that we posted.
I know that the year before I got here in 81, I think they pounded Virginia and Coach Dick Bestwick's last team. And then the next time they played, JMU won, in I think, a fairly low-scoring game, if I recall. And Gary Clark, I think, was the difference in maybe both of those games, who a Pulaski County kid who went on and became a great player at JMU and then went on to become a great player with the Jacksonville, Bulls in the USFL, and then went to the Redskins and
became
a superstar pretty much for the Redskins. And
won some Super Bowls up there. Yeah.
Joe Gibbs. He was one of Joe Gibbs' greatest players.
Yeah, the 79, 82, and 83. 79, Virginia won 69-9. JMU won in 82, 21-17. Virginia won the 83 game 21-14. So a couple of close ones there.
Yeah, I'd forgotten they played in 82 and 83. I didn't see the 79 game. But, Virginia football was in pretty bad shape at that point. It's an interesting game that just kind of came up out of the blue. It makes sense economically. I think they'll probably pay JMU around $500,000. One of these buy games.
I saw the figure, Jerry, $550,000. So good instincts there. Exactly right.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. I mean, JMU's been a FCS power for a number of years now. They've relied heavily, I think, on getting some great offensive infusion from transfers. Don't know how that philosophy, if that'll stay the same, I suppose it will, with the transfer portal being as.
I'll say this. I don't know that it will, Jerry, and here's why. They were getting that infusion of transfers. They were getting guys from Power 5 schools who weren't getting playing time. A lot of Ohio State, there were like three or four Ohio State kids on this year's team that would transfer down because you could play right away. when the rules were that if you went from a 1A school to a 1A school, you had to sit out a year. But if you went to from a 1A to a 1AA, you could play right away. That's well, right. That part went away, and now they're going to be a 1A FBS school. So wonder how that impacts them when they move up to FBS. We won't know right away. We might know 2023 how that's going to impact them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I don't know a lot about their personnel and all that, but they went deep into the playoffs this year again, and seem to be a quality program. How that translates immediately into FBS football, I don't know. Only time will tell. This will be their first season, I guess. I don't know what their schedule this season's like. I don't know how many. I know they're in a conference, so I imagine the majority of their games will be – they're in the Sun Belt. Is that right, Chris?
That's right. That's right, yes.
I assume they'll play a pretty full complement of conference games, and then probably – I don't know who they'll take on as non-conference opponents, but sometimes that transition's not so easy as Liberty and Old Dominion found out. So only time will tell.
Yeah, their schedule for next year, they have Middle Tennessee, which I think is a conference game. They have Norfolk State's a non-conference game. That conference, the Sun Belt's not bad. Appalachian State's there. Georgia Southern has been a good program of late. Marshall. Old Dominion's joining them as a new member. They're moving from Conference USA. They have a non-conference game with Coastal Carolina and a non-conference game at Louisville. So they put together a pretty good schedule for their first year in at the FBS level.
Yeah, that is a good schedule. And you're right. That's some good Sun Belt teams. So it won't be a cakewalk, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I was kind of surprised that Virginia would agree to that after the way Tony Bennett was treated after the game over there at JMU this season. But I thought that might have created some harsh feelings, but apparently not.
Yeah, from what I'm reading and gathering from the reading of the tea leaves by various folks, both sides needed a game next, just one game. That's why it's a one-off. They just needed a game next year. And, this is one of those things, though. It's kind of like that basketball game you talked about. I don't know that there's a win for Virginia in this. It's weird to say, you know, JMU's the team, the program coming with the success at the FCS level, but you know, if Virginia wins, well, you were supposed to win. You're the ACC school. You're the Power 5 school. And if Virginia loses, just like in the basketball game, you know, it's kind of egg on your face. So, and plus, in this case, you're paying $550,000 for the privilege to do that. So, you know, the JMU folks are going to circle this one. They probably already circled it. As soon as the news came out this morning, around 10 or 10:30, whenever it was this morning, JMU fans, I'm sure players, recruits are saying, here's our chance to prove ourselves. We've been saying for years we can go and beat Virginia. And we can run Virginia. I think there was a story I found. One of the news sources that wrote about this was quoting D'Angelo Amos, who played at both schools. I hope I got that name right. He said, oh, yeah, when I was at JMU, we talked about how we run Virginia. Well, you play at the FCS level. It's easy to run Virginia when you're, you know, playing other FCS schools. This is on their calendar, just like that basketball game was. And even though the game's in Scott Stadium, they're coming for Virginia in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect a huge crowd, maybe a sellout crowd for that game, because you know, Old Dominion, Richmond, William and Mary, they usually don't bring too many fans. They bring a decent complement, but I think JMU fans will show up in numbers.
They'll sneak their way in. Yeah.
it's an opportunity, and you know, it's their chance to prove themselves. You know, you want to run Virginia, well, there's a chance to do that. So it'll be interesting to see where Virginia is in 23 after Tony's first season coming up, just where he can take this program in a short period of time. And I would imagine Virginia would be in pretty good shape by then. He'll have a full recruiting year under his belt, a chance to have developed some younger players. Don't know if we'll have a – I don't guess we'll have another an Armstrong around, but some of these other guys will still be around. Yeah. It could be a pretty good Virginia team by then.
I think 2022 could be interesting for Virginia too, schedule-wise anyway, the schedule kind of
I do too. Talk about opportunity. The opportunity is there with that schedule if Virginia can put a defense together and stay fairly healthy. I think they have a much better chance than I would have imagined just because of the way the schedule sets up.
It really sets up nicely. That's right. Well, tonight, Virginia and – North Carolina, it's a fun rivalry game for the fan base and a big one for Virginia to continue its quest for an NCAA tournament bid. Look for coverage on jerryratcliffe.com and augustafreepress.com. For Jerry Ratcliffe, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Everyone have a great day.